And the motion picture is the most important art film ever devised by the human race. It is the art form that creates more empathy than any other. It creates our ability to step out of our own shoes.
From Akron, Ohio, this is episode 231 of On the Tropes. On this week's episode, we're going to play a game. We're going to talk about some stuff we've been watching. We're going to hang out. We're going to chill. We'll talk about Hungarian horse movies. As always, I'm your horse, Nick. And today I'm joined by that's how the show's going to start, unfortunately. I don't know.
Sir.
And
Eva.
And Eva. It's a fucking mess already. I want to talk about, before we get to the game, let's talk about this movie that I watched. This was
Nick, you're not, I noticed you're kind of stiffly. You're not.
No.
You haven't had a break.
No, I have. So a couple months before COVID, actually, the last time I went to a doctor, I went to an allergist to see what I'm allergic to. And it turns out, you want to know what I'm allergic to? This is weird. It's fucking every plant. I'm allergic to every single plant in the world.
Nice.
So, yeah, the summertime is when it peaks. So I can't breathe out of my right nostril even a little bit. Left one, totally fine. Nice and clear. Righty, nothing. So that's no breakthrough cases for me, fortunately. I do want to get on that booster, though, I gotta say.
Yeah,
I'm definitely. In a friend group chat with it's me, my wife Nellie, friend of the show Jake, who I don't, Eva, have you met Jake before?
I don't think I have.
He's been on the show way back in the day. Actually, maybe not even this incarnation of the show. Sir, you've of course known Jake pretty much. Yeah, pretty many much years. Like as long as you've known me, really. Like not as well, obviously, but I think.
Basically, yeah. Like, I mean, maybe like maybe yeah, a year yeah, off.
Pretty close. Like it's been nigh on 20 years since you've known him. So it's me, him, Nellie, and Jake's wife, who's like Nellie's best friend. And our chat name used to be called Vax Me Daddy. When we all were hoping to get vaccinated. And then once we all got vaccinated, he changed it to Vaxxed Daddies. And the other day I just changed it to Booster Me Daddy. Cause we all need to get up on those boosters. Apparently they're paying people now, like $100 in Ohio. Or maybe it's just,
I heard about
maybe
that.
It's just some accounting.
Is that just if you get them now or can we just cash in?
I think it's only if you get them now, but I'm not positive. I just saw that like,
the booster shot?
No, I think it's just the regular ones. I just saw that like 2 days ago.
$100.
$100, folks, if you're in Ohio or maybe just Summit County, and I don't know the specifics of any of this. I read a headline, I think it was on Cleveland.com or something like that. Some rag.
It might have been a Facebook.
I definitely saw it on Facebook, so I don't know the veracity of it at all. But I don't know. Get it anyway, you fucking goon. Even if they don't pay you, it's fucking Seriously. Free. It's the only free health care you're ever going to get.
There you go.
Anyways, Eva, you recommended this movie to me. Was it on the show before we...
It was on my best of 2020. It was the best.
Okay.
I had it picked as the best movie that I had seen in 2020. Obviously not a new film in 2020. But it was my pick for 2020, yeah. And Sir and I had watched it like it was like one of the first couple days of the stay-at-home order. It was on TV.
Yeah, it came on TCM's Noir Alley, mm-hmm. And
we haven't said the title yet, have we?
It was.
We have not.
So it's called Address Unknown, which is not. I mean, it's not super hard to find, but I had to buy a DVD copy of it on eBay. So it doesn't have like a big fancy release and there's no Blu-ray of it and it's not streaming anywhere, but sir, you were going to give a little summation of it.
Yeah. So it popped up on Noir Alley and it's a
And it was really cool because Eddie Mueller was quick to point out this isn't like a traditional noir film that they would normally play, yet the feel of it, the kind of outcome, the seriousness of it was kind of like pushes it into that lane.
Yeah, it has the look of a noir, and it even has so it's told with like letters being told back and forth, and that kind of like sort of mimics noir narration style, but it's not like there's no hard-boiled detective, there's no mystery. It's really much more a political drama set in a noir environment. But do you want to give like a brief plot summary, Eva?
Sure. Okay, so we have this is in the 1930s. This is before the movie was released in 1944, I believe, yeah, during World War II. However, it takes place in the 1930s. We have an Austrian American family, or Austrian actors playing Germans. They're German speaking people. They, man, his wife, and all of their kids. And he is best friends with another immigrant man who is Jewish. And the movie opens with them having kind of a picnic, and they're talking about how the German family is moving back to Germany. And they're moving back because this is going to make their job work more smoothly. He's going to, acquire these paintings in Germany. He's going to ship them back to California, and they're all going to make a lot of money, and everything's going to be great. There is, when they move back to Germany, he is very quickly, tantalized by the lure of like the social standing and the other things that he can get from joining the Nazi party and moving up in ranks in it. And he pretty quickly, and not out of economic anxiety and not out of desperation or fear that he's going to be punished if he doesn't join, really purely for gain, he goes all the way in.
It's basically just like a social convenience to be a fascist.
Oh, yeah.
One of the things I really like about it is that he, like you pointed out, it's not economic, it's not any kind of pressure. The Nazi party has something about it that he has an affinity for, that he relates to, that appeals to him. And one of the things that's really interesting is the guy is maybe like in a late 40s, maybe, would you guys say?
Probably mid-40s, yeah. He's got like...
Mid-40s to almost 50s.
He's old enough to have a grown son who's like on the verge of getting married.
But they've got a couple little kids,
yeah,
too.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, so he's like in his 40s, which is really consistent with... the age group of people that went really right wing under Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a matter of pressure. It's a matter of, they appealed to the things, they essentially appealed to almost a sense of like almost nostalgia.
Absolutely.
These are the things that would appeal to him in his age group, his generation, that he associates with strength and manhood and that kind of waning vitality that all guys start to experience. Like, I think that's a really big part of it, and a big part of why men are kind of beguiled by fascist movements in the first place. I think there's, we were talking a lot about what German culture was at the time. Like, a lot of the men in that generation grew up with similar to like adults over here from that generation, had a lot of routine, like corporal punishment was a much bigger deal and was much more harsh.
It was way more severe than
way more severe.
Even our grandparents would tell us about.
I think I think for sure our grandparents, or my grandparents at least, it was pretty rough all around. Like, kind of worldwide, it was just much more likely to hit your kids or beat them with something, and no different in Germany. And so I think like that just familiarity with this like hard kind of hyper-masculine sense of authority was really appealing to a lot of those guys. And it really like shows that. It shows that that it's something he associates with strength, with power, and he just wants to be a part of it. It's not that he's not suffering in any other way, or it's not like, the key thing there is there, it's not economic anxiety that drives him to do that.
So wasn't one of the guys his friend from high school or something, like his friend from when they were young, that kind of like brings him into the party? There's like that Baron who like is in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
But then there's like one dude he goes and meets, right?
No. So it's really
the guy he goes to meet isn't in the party, right?
I can't remember.
Yeah. So he,
like his friend that's over.
Yeah. There. So the main guy who like gets him in is sort of this suave, like almost mustache twirling German guy.
It's the Baron, yeah, right? Yeah.
Who
Baron von Fries.
Yeah, who's higher status than him, and he's really his in into the party. And then he of course has like the two, I guess, tethers pulling at him from either side are him and then his business partner and best buddy at home, whose last name is Eisenstein. But it's really like he doesn't even have that sort of connection where it's like, you know, a childhood friend or a family member who coaxes him into like, hey, you should be a Nazi. It's really just like he meets a guy and it was easy. He becomes a Nazi because it's really easy for him. Like the path of least resistance was like, yeah, fuck it, we'll do it. We'll get to go to these cool parties and I can be anti-Semitic and get away with it. Yeah, I thought the movie was like incredibly timely with the current, you know, hard right of some people, that the hard right term that people have taken just in the last few years. And I think it echoes really well with this movie that was made, you know, closer to a century ago than the current day. So, yeah, I thought it was, and it's like, it's a very stylish movie. There's like some really thrilling moments. Like there's a scene when the girl's being chased from the theater when it's made apparent that she's not who she says she is in terms of her stage name. That scene's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, what a callback to the monster movies.
Yeah,
that era.
Yeah.
Like the mom. Like a monster. I mean, just a really great scene.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was a movie that I hadn't heard about until you brought it up on the show, Eva. And I'm super glad I checked it out because it's really good, and people never talk about it. No one ever.
It's a hard find.
But it's the type of movie where, like, if Criterion were to release it, or somebody like, if some boutique label were to release it, I think it would be a huge hit.
Yeah, and it's when we haven't really...
Absolutely.
We haven't even gotten to the part where the movie is about this guy's descent into fascism, but then how someone is basically torturing him by mail.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... Somebody wrote a review on Letterboxd who said... It's like when you're traveling abroad and your family back home keeps sending you text messages and you keep telling them to stop because it's costing you money and they won't stop. That he becomes like, you know, like frantic,
yeah,
and terrified that if he keeps getting these letters in the mail, the party's going to think that he's an agent, that he's a double agent somehow. And how can he get these letters to stop?
Jewish sympathizer.
Yeah. And it's pretty great. And it does get a little bit of a mystery there at the end because we were trying to figure out who's sending the letters.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, maybe this is just me having a different read on it, but this is sort of like going into spoiler territory, but I thought it was clear as to who was sending the letters. And then at the end, you find out that was all a misdirect. Like mm-hmm. I thought that the movie wasn't even ambiguous about it. It was like, tricking you in the way that the Nazi guy is being tricked. Like, you're falling for it as much as him. It's, and that ending is like, it's satisfying in the most bittersweet of ways, because it's satisfying, but it's also like clearly not enough for all the horrible stuff that this guy has wrought. Yeah. Awesome. Terrific.
Yeah. It's a pretty good swerve. I think I agree with you that, yeah, I did. I thought that I knew who it was, and it is, it's really satisfying who it ends up being.
Right.
Anything else that you guys have watched recently? And I know that one wasn't recent, but that was something I watched. Have you guys seen anything good recently?
Man, movie wise, one thing that I just looked at, we watched it a while ago, and I don't know if we ever talked about it. It was Sumo Do, Sumo Don't.
Yeah, I thought of it during the romantic and episode we did.
I actually just thought it, I looked it up because a movie that was almost on my list was by the director. He also directed Shall We Dance, which is a 1996 Japanese romantic comedy that ended up getting a really shitty 2004 remake with Richard Gere. And he also does this movie called Sumo Do, Sumo Don't, about a, it's like a typical sports comedy film where this young university student, he ends up, he needs credits and he has to sign up for the failing sumo club, and just a really great, like really kind of tender early 90s Japanese drama.
Yeah
really good.
Where did you see that?
Oh man, where did we end up watching?
Was it on YouTube?
It might have actually been on YouTube. I don't know if it's...
I'm pretty sure it was. I'm pretty sure it was the full film on YouTube.
What about you, Eva? Besides that?
Well, I think that movie's going to stick out to me because that was right when I got out of COVID isolation. That's when we watched that. I can't remember the last movie I watched. Oh, I know which one I want. It's on Criterion, and it's in their like art house animation collection. And it's there's a Czech stop motion animation. It's like a Ray Harryhausen, where it's like live action with like stop motion.
Is this the Carol Zeman?
Yes. And it's Journey to the Center of Time, I think, is the translation of the title. It's these like schoolboys who get in a boat and get into this cave that takes them back in time, and it's almost like a like an amusement park ride, you know, that they're like going in a straight line and it's going back in time. And I really, the animation in it, the stop motion animation of these like dinosaurs and other animals, in some ways better than Harryhausen's. In general, comparable to Harryhausen's work in the same period. And I just thought it was a really sweet story, like the way it was told, where if it had been an American movie, the kids would have been like fighting each other eventually. You know, something would get broken and they would fight, or they would split up and one kid would get hurt, or, you know, a kid would go someplace they weren't supposed to and something bad would happen to him. And like none of those things happened. It was just a really like more of a tender like kids movie where they all work together. And I have my relative in Slovakia, who's in his 70s. I wrote him an email when I watched it, and I told him like just how much I loved it, because I said I wish I had seen it as a kid, because it would have been my favorite movie when I was a kid. If that had, like, I loved Clash of the Titans when I was little for the same reason, and that I wish that I had seen it when I was little and all the stuff that I really liked about it. He wrote me back that he had seen it when he was a boy and he loved it. He's like, that was one of my favorites as a child too. And I was really, really happy about that.
Yeah. I've been meaning to show Evie that and some Harryhausen's too. Cause she has gotten a little bit into Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton. So she's definitely able to like, go with stuff that's a little bit slower paced than like, you know, regular kids cartoons and things like that. Her new thing is the old Pink Panther cartoons from like the 60s and 70s, which play out just like a silent movie. It's still, you get the score and almost no dialogue, and it's just hijinks. They're pretty good.
Throw some in the chat. You ever seen The Little Prince and the Eight-Headed Dragon? It's got like, that's when I remember watching with my kid, but they're really young. And it's like similar animation. It's really like simple. Here's the trailer, and then you can just copy this out of there so you can watch the whole thing. It's actually another movie that's, I hate saying this on the show yet. It's also available on YouTube. And hard to find.
What year is this from? Is it newish or is it old?
This one, it's really old.
Oh, 1963.
It's from way back there.
You'll have to check this out.
Yeah, it's really solid.
All right. You know what time it is, you guys.
Burger time.
It's game time. Burger time is a game, though. You remember the old arcade?
Remember Office Linebacker? Robin's Linebacker. And he's like, when it's game time, it's paying time.
Mm. What is this?
You remember Office Linebacker? Terry
Tate. Oh, yeah.
The Office Linebacker commercials. Yeah. It's like, when it's game time, it's paying time.
So it is going to be paying time. This is an email from friend of the show, JDMF, John Ducker. He says, hey, guys. Mm-hmm. This has been a long time coming, but I've built a version of the Title Kinect game that works like Tribond or Only Kinect, where the connection can be anything. Well, not anything, because it'd be really hard to build a version of that that would score your answers. But there are 250 different answers for all kinds of connections. They're grouped into categories, so you pick a category like one awards, and then a specific answer like over five Oscars. You start with three clues, and everyone gets to make one guess. If no one gets it right, you get two more clues and a second chance to guess. If still no one gets it right, the answer is revealed and no one scores. Between the complexity of the game, the complexity of the code, and the fact with so many options is potentially going to be a tough quiz, I predict this will be an utter disaster somehow. Prove me wrong, guys. Make all this effort worth it by getting at least some of the answers right and having fun playing. That'll show me. And then he signs it, JDMF, seriously, if this works, it'll be a miracle. So I've got the thing and it says we can delete people. And I'm trying to delete people, but it's not letting me delete Cal and Themo, our co-host in absence. So I think I don't understand this at all. We'll just give it a shot. I'll read the clues and I think we're just guessing. The clues are Layer Cake, Drive, and Fight Club.
Okay, so am I guessing
what the connection
What's the connection between the two? The three of them?
I'm going with jackets, like a cool jacket. I can't type my answer in here. I think this is a read only.
Yeah, I think so. That's probably, I can't remember the jacket from Layer Cake, though.
Well, speaking of Hungarian, as you alluded to earlier with your horse film, I was making this like canned hot mustard tonight that's like more like a butter or a jam made out of peppers than like mustard, but you use mustard as the binding agent. And something happened to me that has never happened to me in my life. I broke a jar in the canner. Ooh. Yeah. I put it in and I heard a crack and I thought, well, that was odd. And then I looked down and the top half of the jar was floating away from the bottom half.
That's not good.
So I have a mess in my kitchen. I'm going to clean up when we're done.
I think my answer is wrong. Do you guys have guesses?
I have no idea.
So Layer Cake, Drive,
Fight Club.
Those are all like neo-noir films.
I'll try putting in noir.
there.
So there's another like category on the side that says type and specific. So we can pick up additional clues. All works starring, all made X in ticket sales, won awards, death of famous actors first. Let's click on famous actors first. And then specific. Let's see, film of their career. I don't think it's working, or I'm doing it wrong.
Okay, related to this, when is John Ducker just going to come on the show with us and be the host of the game?
Oh, yeah.
So that somebody knows how to do it, and then we can all play.
Well, usually they're not this.
This is pretty complex.
My question still stands.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, this is probably the only one that we haven't been able to.
No, I think that is a good point, though. This one's super complex. I don't even know. See, now I don't. Wait a minute.
Well, what's the answer to that one? Maybe that'll help us figure it out.
It's possible that I was putting the answer in the wrong bar. I don't know. I don't even know where the answer would go. I guess we'll never know. All right, well, what else have you watched? What else have you guys been watching?
Man, we've been watching a lot of wrestling.
Wrestling?
Like professional wrestling.
Are people able to do that? Is that not a...
Like the sports entertainment costumes flips wrestling. Yeah, that's right. I think like the last era of pro wrestling that I watched was like, I guess it would have been like 93 or 4. And yeah, because there were like some MMA fighters that did the crossover. I was like, wow, let me check out a couple episodes of the soap opera like pro wrestling universe. And man, it is weird. Vince McMahon is still in control of it. It's really bizarre. Yeah. There's also like, I don't know. I think now I appreciate it more than I did because I appreciate the different kinds of skills that go into it. Like you have to be good at like improv, comedy, do some acting. Yeah. It's still like, it's still pretty embarrassing.
Mm. is it still actively going on like with COVID and all that?
It's still.
Yeah.
Yeah. They did like basically the same thing that, all of combat sports have been like the most thriving sports industry because you don't need huge teams.
It's just two
athletes. And which is had its ups and downs because like the UFC has had like a lot of fighters kind of get COVID and you know they're really right wing, so they've been
vaccinated and
kind of like pushing back against actually being safe about it. I mean, they made a big point about like, you know, they formed one of the a bubble like the NBA did. Mostly lately it's been like sports. Like we just, you know, the Olympics was just on.
Cause I think that compared to like baseball, you never really get close to someone in baseball. But
in your outdoors,
but there's 25 people on one team, 25 people on the other team. So, you know, you can see how there'd be like pros and cons to the one versus the other.
What's the reaction from like baseball players been to like getting vaccinated and weren't being masked? And
things like that? So for the most part, players are, I would say the average player is vaccinated and is not vocal about getting other people to be vaccinated at all. Because if teams have, I think the threshold is 80% vaccinated, then they can have a little bit laxer restrictions, like you don't have to wear a mask in the dugout or in the clubhouse, and you don't have to get like as frequent COVID tests, which is good for a couple reasons. And like not from a health point of view, but from a baseball strategy point of view, because if you get tested all the time, and even if you're asymptomatic, you can still obviously get COVID, be asymptomatic, and then you're going to miss like almost 2 weeks worth of games. And especially like this time of year, it's getting down to like every game matters. So if teams are able to get to that threshold, they're not getting tested all the time. So they may be able to, one, not miss people for getting COVID, and you're not picking up as many asymptomatic cases, which is, you know, maybe not for the best. This is, I'm just talking about baseball strategy, not public health. But there have been a lot of players who are still really reluctant to get it. Not every team has reached that 80% threshold. A lot of teams have not reached that 80% threshold. A player who was just traded to the New York Yankees and said he talked to his doctor, and they said, I don't know if the doctor said this or this was his takeaway from it, is that he's young and healthy and doesn't need to get the COVID vaccine, even though he's a cancer survivor. And guess what he was diagnosed with like a week ago? It was COVID. Wow. So, wow. Yeah. I mean, like baseball players, I'm surprised that as many of them did actually get vaccinated, because baseball players are notoriously conservative. So it's good that,
yeah, it's the same with like MMA fighters. Like, it's been ridiculous. Like, one of them made this big deal on Twitter about how he wasn't going to get, it was Michael Chandler, he wasn't going to get vaccinated because it wasn't FDA approved. You know, almost nothing he puts in his body is FDA approved. However, and then yesterday somebody was like, well, there's the FDA approval. He was like, hey, I just don't want to get it. He just admitted, like, no, I just don't want to get it. It's like, wow. These people. Yeah, so he might actually miss out on an event because he had a fight scheduled for
Edison Sport, New York,
which is requiring that anybody who's participating in an indoor event be vaccinated. So he might miss out on a big fight, bunch of money.
Good. Fuck him.
Because he's a knucklehead.
I have a feeling his opponent is also... I would not be surprised
probably if his opponent
is also not vaccinated. So they'll probably just move that event somewhere else that they can still have those two assholes fight each other. But yeah.
I would imagine that Justin Gaethje is more likely to be than Michael Chandler, though.
I think you're right. However, finding out that he also thinks that that's his right, that this is all unfair or something like that, would not be surprised if he thinks that too.
Well, because HIPAA. Just the excuse of that. Oh, well, I don't have to tell you if I'm vaccinated because HIPAA. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I'm doomed.
We really are. So I'm estimating that in the last like 3-4 months, I'm watching 8 to 10 hours of wrestling a week.
Ooh.
Right now. I'm just kind of counting off the top of my head here. And I think that's probably the high end of the average. However, that sounds about right.
Well, and you said it, that because there's like a pro wrestling resurgence right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because everybody in our generation is coping.
Oh yeah.
Trying to please our inner child.
I was gonna say, it's got child. For people who watched it as kids, like a nostalgia. I was never really into it as a kid. But it's got that nostalgia for like a lot of people for our age who like grew up in the early 90s, late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm totally missed the boat on wrestling. I don't know who any of these people are. I have a vague idea of like who Jake the Snake is. And...
That's a good one.
Well, Jake the Snake's the, yeah.
He's still on TV?
There's something really fascinating about a perpetual storyline, I think, is something about lately. Like, Vince McMahon would always say that's one influences of soap operas. And just the idea of a never-ending cast of characters, and how do you keep that going?
I was thinking about it the other day. It's a really interesting combination where you can't just be good. You can't just be athletically good. Like, if you are a really good pitcher or a really good boxer or a really good wrestler, it actually doesn't matter what the crowd thinks of you or not. You can still win. But in professional wrestling, it absolutely matters how the crowd thinks of you and how they'll respond if you win. That determines some of how often you're going to win or when.
Mm-hmm.
And so, unlike any other professional sport that I can think of, your ability to perform to an audience and get them to react a certain way is part of what makes you good at it or not.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it is the idea that it's a professional sport is probably the thing that holds it back the most. As much as people hate Vince McMahon, and as much as they're right to hate Vince McMahon, because he's terrible. His like changing it to sports entertainment was probably the truest thing, though, because it's not, because it is a performance. I think so CM Punk made his big return. Nick, I don't know if you've ever heard of this CM Punk or not. Yeah, he was like a major, I guess, 2000s era. Yeah. Like he's like straight edge and one of the first like kind of progressive characters. And his whole thing was being good on the mic and like talking really well. And that's a lot of it. Like you have to be a great public speaker. You have to be able to hold an audience. You have like, kind of like, there's a lot of the same things that make comedians good or bad are what make wrestlers good or bad. Like how well can you hold a whole stadium of people? I think that's the biggest part of it. It's like you said, if it was just about winning or losing, then, you know, plenty of them would be great because they're good athletes. Yeah. It's really fascinating. Like now there's a lot more people coming from other sports. So there's a guy in it now who was in Cirque du Soleil. There's like people who are ballerinas coming over. Like it's really, really interesting the way it's going.
I just want to throw out there that the reason that McMahon changed the classification of it and started insisting on calling it sports entertainment rather than just a sport is only to avoid the taxation that he was by going from town to town and booking sporting events. He was being taxed like a baseball game or a boxing match, and he didn't want to pay those taxes, so he reclassed his sport as entertainment so he could save money, so he could keep more money for himself. I in a way, like, yes, the outcome of a match is decided upon. It's some fixed point in time before it actually happens. Mm-hmm. However, I think anything where, like any other, like a combat sport, like boxing or MMA, those matches are also arranged, not the outcome of it, but the two people in it, because it's anticipating the crowd. They want to book the fights the crowd wants to see.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because they're going to sell tickets. And so in a way, like, does the predetermined outcome make it like less of a feat? To me, it doesn't. To me, that's almost,
oh yeah, for sure. Like the physical element of it is like undeniable. I mean, it's really difficult to do.
Well, Alistair Overeem sure did today, didn't he?
Yeah. There was, and an MMA fighter just took it upon himself to have the cringiest interview he could possibly have. It was like homophobic and everything.
Yeah. All the worst takes about pro wrestling that you remember from study hall in 1998, he managed to find.
So yeah, watching a lot of wrestling. Watching Game of Thrones again. Yeah.
How far are you on it?
Oh man,
the trial. We just had
your intro. Mm-hmm.
That's like peak Game of Thrones.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right that it. Season 3 and 4. It probably does hit a high point. I mean, I'm much more forgiving of the ending than almost any. I really like it.
We've talked about that. I think we all came to like a similar conclusion on that.
I'm noticing more and more that, yeah, I think that, and watching it again, I think the show sets that up. It is kind of setting it up. Like, I don't know why anybody thought she'd have a different character outcome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's probably Peter Dinklage's best work. I think this moment with the trial, like we just, the episode we watched last was the one where he gives his monologue about being a dwarf.
Yeah, he's really.
I
was just going to say, he's really good. Now. He's really good at that. Like that's maybe his best moment in the show, I would say.
Yeah, now that you're seeing it, well, like almost a decade late. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, now I'm getting the feeling like I don't, like, if it's all downhill from here, like, do I really have to watch the rest of it?
I don't personally think it's all
not,
downhill.
It's not all downhill.
I think that it, it's slightly less even for sure. Like episode to episode, 3 and 4 are probably some of the strongest.
Okay. Yeah. So like we established, I think we alluded to it when we did our Game of Thrones episode, like I didn't watch it as it was happening. And yeah, so this is the first time I've watched it straight through. What are my thoughts on it? It's not what I thought it was going to be when I, you know, HBO costume drama, I was expecting, honestly, like more boobs and more violence than I'm getting. Maybe that's because I'm depraved.
But there's a lot of boobs and a lot of violence.
There is, but for some reason, I guess by the way everybody was talking about it, I was expecting there to be more per capita, I guess, more per episode.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if, like, compared to Rome and, like, Nick, did you watch Rome?
No.
There's a lot of nudity in that.
Yeah, you're right. I was expecting it to be more like
Rome. It's like, it's a little bit less, I mean, for as much as Game of Thrones got due criticism for, like, nudity during exposition scenes and just, like, clearly unnecessary nudity. Rome, I feel like, had even less necessary nudity at times. And then so did Deadwood. I don't know if you watched that.
I started it and I just kind of fell off, not because I didn't like it. I just have trouble sticking with TV shows.
Yeah, I feel like Deadwood had less or just as gratuitous and unnecessary nudity in it.
Mm-hmm.
I think this watch has, I've noticed more of the like other, the like allusions to other genres in it. So there's a scene where one character admits to poisoning her husband. I don't know. Do we care about spoilers in the show?
Not anymore.
Yeah, spoiler alert. When Lyza, the Queen of the Vale, admits that she murdered the former Hand of the King with Littlefinger, it's like a noir moment. And there's that scene, actually happens a little earlier, with the mountain or the hound and Arya that kill like a inn full of Lannister soldiers. That's basically a Western scene, like as clear as day. And I think the first time around, I didn't notice like allusions as much.
Yeah, it's a good show. I'd like to rewatch it at some point, especially those first few seasons when it's a little bit more like the end is that like it's so focused on wrapping stuff up, and where the show is best is when it's just kind of like taking its time, letting you kind of live in this world. Mm-hmm. And a lot of fucked up stuff goes on in that world, both normal and also mystical and spiritual.
Yeah, I think that's the best criticism for it. What goes wrong with it is just that it starts to
speed up. Yeah, especially the last season. Like there are some episodes that are just like, they go from one place to one place to one place, and normally you don't, or normally I don't care about that kind of thing, where it's like, well, that timeline doesn't make any sense. But it felt so rushed compared to the way that the show used to really take its time. I've got to get going in a couple of minutes, but I did want to shout out one more movie that I watched. This is a movie that Paul in the UK recommended to me. It's called Iga. It is from, it's a Bollywood movie from, I think, 2012. It's like just shy of a decade. And it is, I'm going to give away like basically the first act turn. And it's a long movie. So this happens like 40 minutes or something like that in the movie. But it is a guy and a girl, and they have this romance, sort of. She's like playing hard to get, and he's trying to be like cute and win her over, and he finally wins her over. But there's a mob, like a local mob boss, who is into her, and she's not into him. She's into this other like younger, cuter guy. So the mob boss kills him, and that guy is reincarnated as a housefly. who still has all of his memories, and he decides to get revenge. So this fly gets revenge on the man, the gangster who murdered him, by simultaneously, like, slowly driving him crazy and also basically just, like, torturing him in various ways. And it escalates to places that you would not expect. Like, it just goes total batshit crazy in terms of what this fly does to this guy. And it's super fun. I had a blast with it. It's really funny. It's super charming. There's musical numbers in it, and the musical number for when he gets reincarnated as a fly. Like, I just had a huge shit-eating grin on my face. It used to be on Netflix. It's not anymore, but if it ever pops back up or if you come across it, it's called Iga, which apparently translates to the fly.
Okay, so to sum up, we have brought up 1940s noir about fascism, 1990s Japanese sumo, slightly comedic sports film.
Feel good drama. Yep. Like, I mean, it is one of the best, the very best, like, truly, sports drama. Truly.
If you like
fun, yeah, if you like
Mighty Ducks,
Major League, anything, yeah, like that, like, it's the movie for you. Okay. Sumo Deuce.
Sumo Dome. 1950s Czechoslovak stop motion animation. Mm-hmm. And 20 pro wrestling, and 2010s ish Bollywood.
Yeah,
I think that covers everything.
We enjoy all the meats of the cultural stew, to quote Homer.
I think we did good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. So yeah, too bad that the game didn't work, but we appreciate the efforts that JDMF puts into those games anyway.
We'll have to figure it out.
Yeah, it's possible that I was just doing it wrong. But maybe not. I don't know. I'm kind of dim, though, when it comes to Excel. If you have your own 40s Nazi noir or Bollywood or Japanese sports drama to send us.
Or memories of pro wrestling. Yes.
Let us know at the usual places on the trips at gmail.com, Facebook, Twitter, yada yada. Yeah, and we got to figure out what we're gonna do next, but we can do that off the air because I gotta go to bed soon, guys. So as always, I've been Nick.
I've been Sir
Eva,
and we'll see you next time when we're gonna talk about horses, Hungarian horses,
horse movies.
Oh, we should do horse movies.
We should actually.
We're gonna do horse movies. I'm calling it. Yeah,
horse movies there.
Alrighty.
In a world where you've just finished listening to the On the Tropes podcast, only one man can save us from the recaps emerging from tvtropes.org/podcast/onthetropes by sending feedback and suggestions to onthetropes@gmail.com. He was a wild card from facebook.com/onthetropes who played by his own rules. She was the most lethal secret operative twitter.com/onthetropes ever tried to kill. Together, they fight crime. This summer, on thetropes.redbubble.com. Coming to a patreon.com/onthetropes near you.
And when I go to the movies, I am that person on the screen. I am having vicariously an experience that happened to someone else. And that makes me a better person. That to see good films and to see important films is one of the most profoundly civilized experiences that we can have as people.